everybody, it's James here. It's Ask Dutch Anything, episode, I think, 39, but I don't have a number in front of me. And that means that we get to ask your questions to the Dirty Dutchman, the crafty veteran himself, Dutch Mantel. You do that by going to questionsfordutch@gmail.com. Submit your questions there via email, and the best ones make it into the script every single week for every single Ask Dutch Anything. Just before we forget, we don't have one next week because we forgot.
What?
Well, we did the interview with Gail Kim, and then we just forgot to do one afterwards.
Yep.
So, anyway, this is the last time you're going to have your questions potentially answered by Dutch for the next 2 weeks. As I say, questionsfordutch@gmail.com. I'll do the quick plugs as well. Pro Wrestling Tees, we are on. Links are in the description. I've got two books, Owen Hart and The Rock. Links are in the description. Also on Amazon, Dutch has two books, The World According to Dutch and Tales from a Dirt Road. If you want the Montan, you can go to Amazon. Links are in the description. Or you can email dirtydutchmantel@gmail.com. Put in your request there. And you could also do that for hats. You can also do that for diplomas as well. And of course, we're on Facebook, Storytime with Dutch Mantel. Search for us on Facebook or click the link in the description and follow us there for lots of exclusive stuff. But having said that, we've got loads of fan questions, as we always do. We get too many that we could ever get round to, but here are the best ones of the previous week. And the first one is from Justin Rourke, Hot Springs, Arkansas. And he says, Mr. Dutch, when you were in the Federation...
You hear that? Mr. Dutch.
Formal.
Thank you, sir.
Formal. When you were in the Federation in the 90s, were you ever privy to the rumor that Howard Finkel was a massive porn aficionado?
Was I privy to the rumor that Howard Finkel was a porn aficionado? Mm-hmm. Well, I think back in those days, a lot of us maybe might have been tuning in to watch that. I didn't know that, but I don't know how you would interpret that. So if he was, I don't care. So, but I never heard that. I really didn't. So
it says, did you witness anybody rib him? Howard was known as one of the nicest workers in the WWF, and Paul Bearer has said that Finkel was often bullied to the point of tears.
Well, I never heard him bullied. I haven't even heard that.
No?
I haven't even heard that. I don't know who would do that. But when I was there, no, he wasn't bullied. He always treated me very, very nice. And I always thought he was a good guy. So, and whoever bullied him, they shouldn't have done that. But this was before they had like rules. That's before they even had any politeness in WWE, because, brother, it was like a goddamn Western bar when you go in there sometimes. Guys say what they want to do, do what they want to do. And I think this was almost the same time that Davey Boy and who was the guy who was one of the Hart's cousin that got messed up? The Ripper.
Owen.
I mean, Owen and another one. He was a...
Neidhart?
He wasn't a part of the family. He was somebody else. But anyway, they had guys that were tremendous ribbers. And they may have pulled a rib on Fink. And that he didn't know how to handle or...
Well, because it wasn't that. It was The Office, I believe. I've heard stories, quite a few stories about Howard Finkel. He was just the office whipping boy, and they just treat him like crap.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, coming from Vince and people like
well,
that.
Well, yeah, but Vince, see, I can say one thing about Vince. Vince never said one word out of the way to me. Never. And even when he would, I left the show one night, I think it was Raw, and they had just put me with Alberto Del Rio. They had just put me with him, and they had this, I guess, League of Nations thing they were putting together. Well, nobody told me. You remember the League of Nations?
Oh, God, yeah, that was horrible.
Oh, horrible. It wasn't that damn good. But they didn't tell me, but we were on last. They put me with Alberto, but didn't tell me about the, they had him in a match on the last segment of the show. And then Vince was saying, where's Zeb? Where's Zeb? He said, well, he's gone. He went, son of a bitch, that damn crafty, sly bastard, got out of here. Never said a word to me the next day. Alberto Del Rio just went out there without me.
Do you, I've just realized I've got the shot of the Japanese milk in there. I'll get rid of that.
How is that?
It's less refrigerated than the first one I got, so it doesn't taste quite as nice. Have you got any more stories about Howard, or where do you... Yeah, any more stories about Howard first?
I never had any stories about him anyway, to tell you the truth.
What did he do in the back, apart from the announcing? What was his role?
He was the announcer. It's all I know. He would hang around, and I never saw him. I would see him up in Vince's office, and he would get the lineup for the show. And that's all I saw him do. I never heard of anybody trying to get really physical with him or rib him really hard, but see, Vince, knowing Vince, they would do that. So they would run little Howard through the vine, I guess, and they'd have all a big chuckle about it. Vince thought it was funny as hell. Mr. Finkel didn't. So, but I kind of stayed to myself, and unless it was brought to my attention, and if they had brought it to my attention, I would have torn that dressing room all to pieces. I'd have ripped and no, I was, I never saw him get ribbed or even heard about it, to tell you the truth.
Well, let me ask you this then. Where does Howard Finkel rank as the all-time great ring announcers for you?
He'd be in the top five probably.
Hmm.
I don't know who would be number one. I never paid that much attention to him. Really, they were all the... He was the announcer in Madison Square Garden and Boston and the big towns. He was the announcer there. He didn't go to... He may have been in Philadelphia and in Baltimore. He may have been the announcer there. But I don't know. That's basically... I don't know what else he did. What he did, I think he...
He collected the porn.
He what?
He collected the pornography for everybody, apparently.
Well, yeah, but he was he reported back to Vince on, say, a WCW show or a Ring of Honor show, which kept Vince from watching it. But he said, Vince, and if he would point somebody out and Vince would look at it, yeah. But Vince, you know, I heard he watched all those shows. He didn't watch all those shows. He didn't have time to watch all those shows. But that was Howard's job.
Next question. Nathan Wells says, does WWE let LA Knight beat Damian Priest for that version of the world title, or have LA Knight chase a heel before becoming a world champion for a while? Should he win the US or Intercontinental title first? So Nathan feels that LA Knight is world championship material.
Well, I may disagree with him a little bit. He's got a lot of attention on him, but he's not going to beat Damian Priest. They're going to let Priest run with that belt a while because he's a big guy. He's about 6'3", maybe a little more. He's Hispanic, he speaks Spanish. So, and if they do put it on him, it'd be for a short term, but I don't see that. And I could be wrong like everybody else. I think they'll let Priest run with that belt for at least a year. I don't think they'll be turning to Mr. L.A. Knight to beat him. See, once you beat him, then what? That kind of makes L.A. Knight, like, useless for the time being. So put a belt on him and let him head up that faction he's got and see where they go.
You've said this before. You don't see L.A. Knight as world championship material. Is he just missing something, or do you just think he's just good in the upper mid-card? Why do you think he's not, like, main event?
I I don't see him as the main event. I really don't. I never have, even when in TNA. He's good. I'm not saying that. He's got to be good to get as far as he's gotten. But I don't think he has that push, oomph, to get him up there to world championship material. Now, he's already, who did he challenge? AJ, was that was to go after the title, right?
Yeah, he beat AJ at WrestleMania, but then they had a rematch for a number one contenders thing for Cody's belt, and then AJ won that.
Well, I don't think, in my opinion, I could be wrong. I hope it works out for him. But I don't think he could get the attention on him. I don't care what they do with him. Maybe they could tell a good story. They could get some attention on him there. But I don't see him in that world championship picture.
Next question. Richie Poo says, hi, James and Dutch. As we know, what's money
his
makes
name?
The world.
What's his name?
Richie Poos, he's saying he is. maybe Jimmy Hart gave him that name. Who knows? Hi, James and Dutch. As we know, money makes the world go round, and we all like a bit of retail therapy. My question is, what was your most extravagant purchase when getting that larger than expected check? And who out of the guys you work with likes to spend just that little too much? Cheers, guys.
Well, one of my purchases was like food because I had run out earlier in the career. So I wanted to make sure I had enough food. And no, I've never spent my money like, you know, other than you buying a car and, you know, you have to have a house and just needed expenditures as I never spent it on just extravagant things. But a lot of guys, you know, they go out there and they spend it like water. And they got this and they got that. But after 5 years, guess what they got? Most of them were back where they started. Now, there's some guys who made that good money and saved it, and they were fine. Some guys made good money but didn't save it, just had a good time, went through it. It's their choice. And they ended up basically broke on their butts.
What would they spend stuff, I mean, apart from drugs, what would some of the big expenditures be? Because I've always heard, you know, back in the day, everyone wanted like a Lincoln Town car.
They would buy like a Mercedes. They didn't need a Mercedes. They just bought it because they always wanted a Mercedes, I guess. And that's back when they were about 40 grand then. And, you know, they'd pull up in it. Oh, it looks great. Drives great. Buddy Landale had one. Buddy Landale, I was riding with him one day, and he had this Mercedes. It wasn't a new one. It was a used one. But he ran that car so hard. He actually completely burned out. You know, it was a stick shift. He completely burned out like high in it. He ran it. Then he dropped it down to second gear and ran it so hard, he blew that one out too. So then he had a Mercedes who would only have going low, and you can't go anywhere in low. So he just burnt the car up, and they finally they come and repossessed it and picked it up. So, see, there's a guy who had a chance. They were going to put the world's heavyweight title on Buddy Landale when he was in Charlotte, when he was in Mid-Atlantic. And guess what he did? He missed Atlanta TV on Saturday morning. Just missed it. And those plans went out the window. So if you can't, and they told him what they were going to do. So if he don't want to make the show and be the champion, you can't put it on him because he's too unpredictable. So he probably lost $300,000 right then. And that's not a good payday, I would say. That's
all the Mercedes he could have bought and then burnt out on the road.
No kidding. The Mercedes was, that's what he bought in Charlotte because they were using him good. They were going to run him against Flair, and he was over because he had the same gimmick almost as Flair, you know, the Nature Boy and Buddy Landale, and he had the blonde hair, and him and Flair had a few matches, and they were going to go and I think take it to Greensboro on a big show and swap the belt to Buddy. And I didn't know it at the time, but I knew when I was there that they were getting ready to use him good, and he just missed the whole TV. Saturday morning, Channel 17 in Atlanta, Georgia, and whoop, there's Winnie's chance. And then the next time I looked up, he was in Memphis with me.
Next question. DS says, hey, Dutch, did you ever work with John Tatum or Jack Victory? I really like their tag team run in WCCW. So any interactions with either of those guys?
Not as a tag team, no. And not a lot, really. And we weren't in the same company together. I know them. I've met them. And that's about it. We just missed each other somehow.
Jack Victory, was he not in WCW 1990, maybe? With Midnight Express with Heyman?
Well, I thought he was with, wasn't he with the Bushwhackers?
No, that was Johnny Ace who was with the Bushwhackers at the time. He was the flag bearer. Unless it was somewhere else and he was in Memphis or something, then he was a flag bearer.
Well, I would never... John Tatum, I met him, but I never had any dealings with him. No matches, no nothing. We just missed.
I'm just having a look. I think you might be right anyway. I'm sorry, yes. He was Jacko Victory. Began wrestling for Jim Crockett Promotions, where he formed a team with Rip Morgan, known as the New Zealand Militia.
Yep.
There you go.
Rip Morgan. Where did he... What happened to him?
Still alive. Which is horrible. That I've got to be that surprised.
You said, hey, he's still alive.
Hey.
No, he was a good guy.
Yeah, Rip. Sheep Herd is the mid-80s, and then The Thing, Rip Morgan, teaming with Jack Victory. Right.
The Bushwhackers team with Jack Victory or no? Am I right?
I don't know. I'm just looking at the Wikipedia on my second screen, which is really awkward. Hang on. So, yeah, he teamed with Rip Morgan. Where are the Sheep Herders? I'll just Google Sheep Herders. Victory accompanied the Sheep Herders to ringside in the UWF Mid-South. So, there you go. That's probably where you met him from, Mid-South, because you were there in 85,
maybe,
weren't you?
Maybe. There you go.
Okay. Next question. Michael Creaney, or I believe that's how they pronounce his surname. I hope so. Dear Dutch and James, I'm emailing from Ireland. I'm a huge fan of the channel. Thank you. I was wondering how you think non-compete contracts being banned will impact the wrestling business. And do you think we will see more surprise debuts, i.e. like Rick Rude and WCW? Thank you. Now, this is actually quite prescient because last week had said NDAs were getting done away with. But no, it's no-compete clauses were getting done away with. So no-compete clauses being done away with, how will that affect the wrestling business?
No-compete clause. It just means that guys can just all of a sudden leave one company and go to another. I don't think it'll have that. I think most guys in WWE are kind of locked in. They may have to say, if you go work for another company, we're not paying you the 3 months. They give you a 3 months grace period. So if you say you give your notice, well, you still get paid for 3 months. But if you jump to another company, they might withhold that money. I don't know if that's legal or not. I guess it is, because they're not working on your shows. So you wouldn't be obligated to pay them, would you?
Well, how's that going to work with negotiating with other companies then? So will you have a window like in the run-up to your contract? Let's say you've got 6 months left on your contract. Will you then be allowed to negotiate with other companies? Because it'll be bit unfair if, like, you're fired now and now you can negotiate with somebody else.
Well, I think the non-compete has got to take in before you leave. You got to be talking to them or somebody else for another spot in another company. See, before, you couldn't even talk to, say he's in WWE, you couldn't even talk to WCW. Or WCW couldn't even talk to anybody from WWE. And they used that. I mean, They were very, very strict. But now that it's been ruled illegal, I guess, or you can't use it, that's going to change. But I don't think it's going to change the trajectory of anybody. It won't change the trajectory of any company. Because you only got one more, so only your top guys would change it. The only ones that could change WWE's direction right now is The Rock and Heyman and Roman Reigns. That would maybe. And I think if you took those three right now and put them in AEW, the first week they'd have a good rating, and then the second week it may go back to where it was. Funny how that happens. But if you take them out of their what people are used to seeing them in and take them out of what their opponents are, doesn't have the same pop to it. So remains to be seen. But I don't think the change will be that evident.
Did, in your two different runs with the WWE, WWF, were the no-compete clauses exactly the same? Or did they even have a no-compete in the mid-90s? When you were Uncle Zebekiah.
Yeah, you couldn't have. Okay, say you got fired. This is where WWE's was illegal. Say you got released. Well, they weren't going to use you anymore, so you're not getting a check. Okay. But they had a 90-day no-compete clause, which means you couldn't go to work for anybody else and pay your bills because it wasn't you'd signed a contract. That's saying that it was illegal, that you wouldn't do it.
And this is before the guaranteed contract as well.
Oh, yeah, it was. I guess some guys had a guaranteed contract. I didn't. A lot of guys didn't.
Next question. Joe from Boston says, hello, guys. I love the show. Please keep up the good work. My question is, did you hear about Jake the Snake Roberts talking about retirement? From the article that I've got some quotes from, I read that Jake the Snake says he has one match in him. I'm not sure he says that in this quote, but I'll read them out to you and you tell me what you think. His last match was in 2015, by the way. So here are the quotes. No, go on. Waiting.
No, I think if he's talking about, he's dreaming. It's what he's dreaming. And he actually agrees with me if you listen to his answer. So he misses the wrestling business. He misses what he used to be. And if he thinks he's got one match in him, well, he doesn't. Because he would go out there like every one of us and try to have the last match, try to perform to the level to where you've performed before. And you're going to find you just can't do it other than get hurt and embarrass yourself and your opponent. So I think Jake is just, he's just talking. And do they even still use him on AEW much?
Barely. He was the manager of a couple of people, like...
he was the manager of that...
Lance Archer? I think he was the manager of... They just re-signed him. So I don't know if he's working more in a backstage capacity for his money these days.
I don't think so. I hadn't heard anything about him working in a backstage capacity. I think Tony Khan just likes him.
Mm-hmm.
And he may call him up sometimes and get his opinion, but... Jake was good on his stuff. I don't know how good he'd be on anybody else's stuff. But you have his answer there that he says?
I do. So the quote says, I knew it was time to retire probably 97 or 98, said Roberts, but I just couldn't stop,
That's 25 years ago.
Yeah.
Or more.
And he's right. He should have retired then. You know, I just wanted more, and shame on me for going out there when I couldn't do what I used to do. You go back out there because you think you can do it. And then when you get out there, you realize that you can't. You don't have the wind. You don't have the strength. You just can't, man. Your body won't do it. No matter how much you have in your heart, your body just can't perform, said Roberts. To this day, I wish the F I could do it. I'd love to have one more match, but I know I can't, and it pisses me off.
Well, welcome to life when you get older. I mean, that's not true in wrestling. That's true in a lot of physical sports, most of them, all of them. You take a guy that's 60 years old, he goes out on the, say, the PGA Tour, he can't hit that ball like he used to. Those guys that eat him up out there, basketball, they'd eat him up. Anything else, boxing, knock him out. But wrestling is the same thing. And there's a lot of guys that just play guitar, just play in band. They can't go out there and do it like they used to either.
Okay, right. Here's a serious question for you. So, and you'll know this as a performer into his 60s. So is the rush of adrenaline getting, because, you know, the cheer from the crowd or the boo from the crowd, the reaction, do you get the same rush as a wrestler as you did as a non-wrestling manager when you were with Jack Swagger? Did you get that same sort of hit of adrenaline from it?
As being a manager, no.
No?
No. I just didn't. Because as a wrestler, you're actively in charge of those fans that you hope are raising hell and cheering or urging you on, or even as a heel, you're in charge of them. But as a manager, you're at the mercy of your talent and see what they're going to do. I used to tell Jack, I said, Jack, do this. And he went, no, Vince don't want me to do it. I went, why? He said, well, he told me not to work the crowd. I said, no, work the crowd, Jack, because he's not going to, we need these people to get up. So he went out there and he worked the crowd a little bit and they came up. They just needed some encouragement from Jack. And I said, you see, you got to acknowledge them too. You want them to acknowledge you, but you just can't do that by doing leg takedowns and all. Then they're just watching. But if you say, hey, how about that? Hold your hands up. And he said he learned something that night. Play the crowd. Because Vince, you say, I don't want anybody to play in a crowd. That's all Vince does when he goes to the ring. That's the whole, when he's in that interest and he's doing this and that, blah, blah. So he makes himself the center of attention, but then tells somebody else, yeah, don't play the crowd. Well, he didn't tell Cena that. He didn't tell Flair that. He didn't tell, you know, Triple H that, not all those guys. And they got a big response from the crowd because that's what the crowd buy a ticket. If you buy a ticket, you expect to be acknowledged or at some point, and it would be a great honor for the wrestler to look at you and say, you need to shut up, boy. Come out there and slap the shit out of you. Now you can go home and say, hey, he threatened to come out there and slap the hell out of me. They said, no, I think it's more like shit out of you. Yeah, oh yeah, well, that's even, makes it even better. But the question was, oh, the manager, yeah, I like the working response a lot more. I had more control of it. And I've seen some guys go out there and they could just do a move and the crowd would come up and they'd pick them up. Then they'd set them down. Then they go to something else. They pick them up and set them down. That's kind of the crowd you want. You want the crowd that is hanging on your every move, everything. They're paying attention. Like when Wahoo McDaniel, and I brought this up before in Valentine, when they would throw those big, I mean, monstrous chops at each other. If you were ringside, you're going to say, those guys can't take that long. And they would leave and blood would be coming out, blood blisters in their chest. But when the people left, they looked at each other and says, I think those two sumbitches hate each other because they were really chopping away. There's nothing to the head, just all to the chest. It's like an unwritten rule. I'll chop you in the chest and you chop me in the chest and see who can take it. And after a while, it kind of explains itself. But they had some great matches, drew tremendous, tremendous money. But you never heard Johnny Valentine in WWE or WWF because he was too old at that time. See, I was in Florida with him in, what year was it? I think late 70s. He had a plane accident and he couldn't walk. Mm-hmm. So that ended his career. But he made a trip with me one time. Not a big talker either, by the way. He talked, but not a lot.
I'm just looking. He actually, it's not a wrestling match. He had one match after the plane accident. It was an arm wrestling match against Gary Hart in Houston Wrestling, 1978.
Yep.
So there you go. I forget why I was looking him up.
I think I was in Florida right before that. Mm. I was in Florida in 1977 and went to Puerto Rico in 78. Now, maybe I went to Nashville in 78, Puerto Rico 79. Yeah. But I remember when he came in as the booker and, he's the one who wanted me to leave and go somewhere. And then, he wanted me to go to some other bullshit territory. I said, nah, I appreciate it, but I'll just book myself. So then I ended up going to Charlotte, which was like the place to be. I did about 9 months, 10 months there. Then they wanted to move me back to Florida. I said, you got to be full of shit. I just left there. And I said, it's the shits. I'm not going back. No, I went somewhere else. Anyway, hell, I spent most of the time fighting the head offices, really.
Next question. There's two questions that are remarkably similar, so I've sort of put them together. I'll ask the second one after you answer the first. Stan Robertson. Or I might have miswritten it. Anyway, Dutch said, I heard you talk about George Gulas being the worst pro wrestler ever, and I totally agree with you. I remember watching him wrestle, and it embarrassed me to even watch him wrestle, but there was another one that I thought was awful. It was Len Rossi's son, Joey Rossi. Could you touch on that on your podcast? Thanks. So, Joey Rossi, never heard of him.
He was Len Rossi's son. Len Rossi was a pretty well-known wrestling figure in the Tennessee area and Memphis and Nashville and around there. But Len Rossi was good. Joey, on the other hand, wasn't. He was a little bit heavy, and he didn't have the fire that his daddy had. And he just didn't have it, basically, to draw money. They used him just because I guess he was Len Rossi's son. They used him. But I agree with what's this guy's name?
Stan Robertson.
Stan.
Well,
Sam or anyway. Stan. I agree with you, Stan. Yeah, Joey Rossi just didn't have it. So you don't need to be an expert to pick out talent that you think might draw a few dollars. He wouldn't draw any money. He might keep some money from coming through the door. But okay, if you put George, this is what I do. I always remember this, people. This is what I do. I would go to a town and I would let everybody in for free. Have I told you this?
Yeah.
I put Joey Rossi, Joey Rossi and George Gulas in the first match and then charge them to get out. Because after seeing that match, screw this, I'm out of here. The longer they stayed, the more it cost them. So I would kill that town right off the bat.
Who was worse, Joey or George Gulas?
Well, Joey at least understood it a little better because of his father. You know, Len would try to teach him, but you just can't teach skill. And in George's case, you can't teach stupid. He didn't know what the hell he was doing, was an asshole too. And the only difference between him and an asshole was the asshole probably had a little personality. George had none. And I don't want to downgrade him, but, you know, if you don't believe me, go look him up on YouTube. And I'm not lying. Tell me if I'm like CM Punk now. Tell me if I'm lying. Mm-hmm. Just watch him.
Next question that sort of relates to it. Corey Hermes, excuse me. Hi, Dutch and James. I know you guys love George Gulas. I'm wondering, who would Dutch say is the worst first-generation wrestler? So, I mean, all these worst wrestlers ever are always sons of wrestlers. But who's the worst first-generation wrestler?
Well, George and Joey were first-generation wrestlers.
No, they were second-generation.
It'd be second-generation. Okay, well, say a son would be a second generation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you one that I don't know if he's second probably, but he's the only one I can think of. David Flair.
Oh, yeah, he's second generation, of course.
Yeah, but, and I've maybe told this story here. Rick calls me up, said, if you use him, I'll come down here and I'll make a couple shots for you. Well, I brought him in, and he was friggin' awful. I says, my God. I tell him, hey, don't do this. And I said, do the strut like your daddy. Oh, I don't want to do that. I said, God damn it. Do what I tell you to do. You get a response when you're doing it. That's the only thing they have to connect you with, because your shitty interviews are not doing it. So, and he just got up in the middle of the night, and all of a sudden he wasn't there anymore. Nor was Rick. Rick wouldn't even answer my phone calls.
Corey, I want you to send in a list of the worst first-generation wrestlers you can think of, and then I'll read them out to Dutch, and then he can pick from a list. But I think that'll be...
Generation, you mean just starting out wrestling?
Yeah. No family connection to the business.
Well, then it's the worst wrestlers, basically, that started out.
But they always seem to be second or third generation, like the worst wrestlers who have, like, you know, some notoriety in the business. Always
related.
I'll
tell you, another guy, second generation, that wasn't worth a shit was Vern Gagne's son.
Greg.
What was his name, Greg?
Mm-hmm.
He was horrible, too. And he was trying to work with the damn Road Warriors. Well, I don't quite work.
Next question. Beardy the Clam has said, hello, gentlemen.
What's
just
his
wondering,
name?
Beardy the Clam. I remember his name. We've asked one from him before. Just wondering your thoughts on race-based factions in wrestling still being a thing in 2024. Bobby Lashley needs a faction. Put him with a couple of black guys. Not sure what to do with Jade Cargill. Put her with a couple of black girls. Seems all that's missing is Crush on a motorcycle and Savio Vega in the LWO. Respect as always. So, yes.
They have done that for years and years and years. And why they do it, I don't know. I really don't know. But, yeah, you're right.
Is it like prison? Is it like prison that all, like, the racial gangs just, like, separate and split out?
Well, it could be if you wanted to paint a picture like that. But they don't. They just put them all together. So I don't see the point of it. All the black people versus whoever. It's almost like that is segregation, because you're picking them to be in this group, and they just fit the qualifications for it. So I don't know. I don't much like it at all.
Next question. Keeley says, were you ever pressured to try IcoPro, WWF's own supplements? They had a company that, so we hear, was so disgusting to everybody who ever tried it.
They wanted me to try it. What was IcoPro? A workout supplement?
Yeah, so they had their powders and their pills and their fake chocolate bars and stuff like that, I think, and apparently it was hideous.
They give me a package of it. I didn't even try it. I took it home. I didn't even take it home. I just took it back to the hotel room. That's as far as it made it back to my house. I wasn't about to take that crap. So, and I didn't do it. So I smelled it, but I never tried it. Not going to try it. So, see, Vince told me one time, he says, Dutch. Oh, no, I mean, Zeb. He never called me Dutch. We need you to lose some weight. I said, well, yeah, I've been kind of thinking about that. So he wanted me to go to a counselor or something. Back in Nashville, when I got back home, he wanted me, and they set it up for me. You go on Thursday morning or Wednesday morning or something. I had to leave on Thursday. So my only day off, they wanted me to get up and drive 30 miles to Nashville to pull in there to talk to this woman for 45 minutes about losing weight. So that didn't last long. Guess how much weight I lost? 0 pounds. I think I maybe added a few. But God, I just couldn't stand to go down there.
Was this in the 90s or was this in the Zeb Coulter run?
No, it was the last one.
Oh, was it in the Zeb Coulter run?
2013, 2014. Yeah. And I think, wait a minute. People actually come in here and talk to you about, why don't they just stop eating? If I wanted to lose weight, I'd just stop eating, tell you the truth. But I didn't want to. Shit, I wasn't making $1 million a year. So, I mean, I was doing, I think, fine the way I was. So,
hang on, you were wearing a padded jacket on TV. I mean, what was the big deal?
Yeah, I say, they'd say, that is for your health. I went, yeah, I know. I didn't.
To clarify, you were given a package of IcoPro and you left it in the hotel room.
Yes, I did.
Brett says, hey, Dutch and James, I was watching a documentary about James Arthur Harris, and they were talking about one of his characters, Kamala, and him wrestling with you. How's it wrestling Kamala? Do you have any good stories about Kamala? Thanks.
Oh, yeah. Kamala, I love that guy. He was a, he come to Memphis TV. Of course, Lawler saw him. And I had seen him. I'd worked with him in Knoxville several years earlier. So I knew him. And he came in and he met Jimmy Hart and met Lawler. And he was a big guy. So Lawler liked him. He said, hell, that could be one of my opponents. So, and then the way they would get guys ready for Lawler, they'd just send him out on Monday nights and tape it, record it. And I think he went through, he beat Bill Dundee first, I think. Then he beat one of the Fabs, Stan Lane. Then he beat Steve Kern. Then he beat one more guy. And then he was supposed to beat, I think, Handsome Jimmy. And Handsome Jimmy, he didn't make it. Because he got hurt. He didn't, literally, he got sick. So they put me in the spot. So if you, the rule is, if you put somebody in the spot of like a Handsome Jimmy, you don't really, that's what they told me. They say you don't really beat him. Because I don't beat him either. But we're just going to get a DQ. So he said, let's don't. Jerry Jarrett told me this. He said, let's don't, it's already a bad taste in your mouth that Jimmy is not here. So if we beat you, then that's another bad taste. So we'll just get a DQ. I said, okay, how you want to do it? He says, and this is in Memphis. This is in the deep South. He said, I want you to pull that bullwhip off the corner and use it on Kamala. I went, Jerry, I don't know. He said, no, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. We'll have Kamala get it first and beat the shit out of you. And somehow you do something and you end up with it. And then you just get a pop or two and he leaves. I said, all right. So we did that. And he whopped me a couple of times with that whip and somehow I ended up with it. But before we went out there, that Kamala's eyes were like this. He said, do it hurt? I said, no, it won't hurt. I'll throw it behind you and end a pop and just sell it. Because you can throw it behind them and where it pops, pow, and it moved so fast, nobody'd be able to tell it. I said, I'll do that about twice, hit the road, hit the bricks. So we did that, and it didn't hurt him. He come back, he said, wow, man, I scared death. I scared death about that bull. I said, I told you I'm not gonna hit you with it. But, and I told you the story, I would go to some of those towns down south, would be like 75% black. I'm with that whip. That was Ernie Ladd's idea, by the way. So, and it worked. And I would go to the ring, and they just, I'd be the heel, and they wouldn't even boo or nothing. They just look at me. That's a very unnerving feeling. You got about 1,000 people in this high school gym, and 80% of them are African-American, and I got a bullwhip. Oh, my God. So sometimes when the black guy would get the whip, hell, they cheer like hell. Beat that motherfucker. And then I'd get out there, and then I'd run, and they were happy with that. So funny how we bringing stuff up like that. James, you're just too much. You are. Give me another question.
Well, what was I going to ask? Oh, yeah, I know it's a basic question, but when I look at Kamala, I always think there's a dude who is a night off. It just, the story tells itself with Kamala.
He is. You couldn't even feel him. You know, when he would go up and he coming down with that chop, it would just, all you had to do was sell it. As soon as it got close, boom, he was gone. And he weighed over 350, probably 375. He was a big old boy. Mm-hmm. So, and it was sad the way he ended up. I think they had to amputate both legs. He had diabetes, but really, really good guy and funny as hell.
Going to ask two more, then we're going to close it down. So Brent Carfee says, gentlemen, back in the early 80s, I attended a match in Chattanooga. I don't know if it was a Gulas affiliated event or not, but it did feature a match between Wildfire Tommy Rich versus Chick Donovan. I had never heard of Chick, but remember he had bleached hair and reminded me of a dollar store version of Ric Flair. Dutch, do you have any recollections of Chick Donovan? Thanks.
Oh, yeah, I do. I think that was a... I know they ran Chattanooga, a different company, but I think it may have been attached to Atlanta a little bit. But Chick Donovan always had a great body, not very tall, and funny as hell too. And they say he's like 70 years old now, but he still looks great, still works out. He was a fireman, I think, somewhere in Georgia, and he just wanted to wrestle. And yeah, I had a Chick. You could have good matches with him. I remember one time he was supposed to run in. He was late. It was me versus Chick Donovan. He ran in the ring and he was late. He was just getting his boots on. Go, go. You're up next. And he came to the ring. He only had one boot on. And I start beating on him, and he's trying to put his boot on. And he's trying to, I don't know. And we finally got to finish. He never got his boot on. I beat a one-booted man on Memphis TV in about 2 minutes. We didn't have time to mess around with it. So, and Chick come back, and he said, I don't know, I'm sorry, man. But they told me to go, and I didn't have my boots. So I didn't know what to do. But we got it in.
Good dude, though. I could have interviewed him like last year, and I couldn't make it for whatever reason, but I thought he'd just be fun to have on for no other reason, just to have him on.
No, he's funny as hell. He really is.
Did you ever meet his dog?
What was his dog's name?
I don't know what the dog's name was, but apparently it was a talking dog. He insisted that the dog talked.
That's right. He had a talking dog. I heard about that talking dog. I wanted to meet that son of a bitch so bad, but he never showed up. So
what did he claim? That he was speaking sentences, or say, how was the match, rough? You know, how did it go?
No, what he told me, the dog really talked. So how was the match? Riff. Actually, it's pretty funny. But I think he what part of, I think he was from Macon, Georgia, or somewhere down there.
Tapping that. I'm tapping it now. Chip Donovan. He is from, where are you? LaGrange, Georgia, it says.
Yeah. There That's north of Atlanta, not south. LaGrange.
Right, I'm going to ask you one more, and then we're going to shut down the podcast. And Tim says, when I get up in the morning, watch you instead of the news, less depressing and more entertaining. I'm 47, and I really would like to hear if you had any anecdotes about wrestling in West Virginia. I always enjoy your stories, and I'm sure you have at least one. Keep up the great content, as you no doubt will, and stay healthy for Pete's sake. Best wishes. So, West Virginia.
Okay, I was going to West Virginia from South Carolina. And I had this guy, and he wasn't even from this country. He was from like South America somewhere, but he was a wrestler. And he had worked in West Virginia. They had used to have some kind of a little outfit there that had TV in Oak Hill, I think, West Virginia. So we're going through the mountains, the Appalachian Mountains, and it started snowing. And it snowed, I mean, really pouring down. We had to pull over and park the car, and it was cold as hell that night. So there was a house right down the, we had just passed the house, and I says, well, hey, let's go down there and ask and have we stay there till the morning and see if this clears up a little bit. Okay. We went down there, and I knocked, and I don't even know these people. I didn't know what gave me this idea, except that if we'd stayed in that car, we'd probably froze, not to death, but it was really cold. And we told them the problem is we can't go anymore on the highway because it's too much snow. And it was like this. You couldn't go. They said, yeah, come on in. So we came in, and they were nice enough. So they had one bed, and it was like in the back of the house. And me and this guy, I think he was from Colombia, South America, and I don't even know how he got here. I guess he got here like the rest of them. I guess he just walked across the border, I guess. This was years and years and years ago. So, said, we got a bed back there. You guys want to go back there? We got in the bed, me and him both. It's a big old bed. And I remember about 2 o'clock in the morning, I heard the door open. Oh, shit. And I woke up. I didn't say nothing, but I watched them, and two guys just stood there and looked at us while we were in the bed. I don't know what they were thinking they were doing, but then they said, yeah, there they are. And I never understood this, but they closed the door and left. And we got up the next morning, and we got the hell out of there. It scared us. I didn't know where I was. But it was snowing outside, and me and this guy named Joe from South America, he didn't even speak English, and we're in this damn bed, keep from freezing. But I got up, but they were nice enough to let us stay there, so I appreciate that. And I don't think they had anything bad planned for us. It was just unusual for somebody just to stop on the road and say, "Hey, you mind if I stop over here for a couple of hours to get my car going?" And then we went on to up to Oak Hill. I remember that. And I had just started wrestling. And I remember the first match they put me in was against Gypsy Joe. This is my first time being introduced to Gypsy Joe. He's from Puerto Rico. I didn't even know it then. He beat the living crap out of me. And I was afraid to really fight back, afraid that he'd take a stick and beat the hell out of me. And we were in the TV studio at the TV station and had a pretty good crowd, but I did what I was supposed to do and put Gypsy Joe over, and we's out of there the next day. I don't even know why we went up there. I think my brother went up there to talk to him because he wanted to open up a wrestling company in South Carolina, except he didn't. We didn't realize what it takes to open up a company. And You got to have more than just ideas in your head. You got to have some financing. We didn't even have that, but that's my trip to West Virginia.
I like how you said they were nice enough to let you stay. They were nice enough to let you leave as well.
Hey, that is good. Nice. Hey, we could have went in there. Seriously. Nobody knew we were there. Nobody. They could have killed us, buried us in that car. They just found the car out there, stopped on the road, and they don't know what happened. And they would go down and talk to the people, I guess. Hey, you know anything about these people in the car? No, I hadn't seen them. And they're not going to spend a lot of time investigating that. We'd just be dead some bitches. Now, that's a hell of a way to think, James.
I was going to say, just
dead son of a bitch.
What a cheery sort of thing to end on. But,
West Virginia was, it's like one of the worst states in the country. And I never liked that state, ever. Did you want a cheery story?
No, we're good with that.
I don't even have any cheery West Virginia stories. I'm sorry.
Well, hopefully you've got more for next week if someone asks for another West Virginia story, but we're going to leave it there. So we've got Gail Kim coming this Friday, Storytime with Dutch, episode 100. She's going to help us celebrate our centenary. That's the right word, isn't it?
Centennial.
Centennial. Our centennial podcast. Yes. I'm trying to think if there's anything to... Yeah, so I wanted to say we can have the singing potato bag of crisps that I can just prove that I'm still in Japan. We've got whatever that is. I just got that from the 7-Eleven. And
what
also,
is that? What is that?
Hang on. It did say in English somewhere, it is a wheat snack.
Oh.
And honestly, this is like the least stuff I could buy.
You need to go and get some food tomorrow.
Yeah, I know. Oh, well, that's what I've got. That's why I've got those. But it's good eating here. There's some really nice stuff.
What time is it there now?
Well, my laptop says 6:55, which is wrong. It's currently 2:55 here, p.m.
Okay.
And for you, what time is it now?
1:55.
1:55 a.m.?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you always told me you stayed up late.
You don't care.
No, I
don't. You said, I'll make that bastard stay up late.
I'll make you work.
Anyway,
I
enjoyed this one.
Yeah, I did as well. I watched the show because it's a wrestling podcast and I had to get something wrestling based in Akihabara.
What is
that? I got this Great Muta doll thing that I might take
out. Is that
out.
A transgender doll? Looks like he has breast.
No, they're just implants. And it says Great Muta Bye Bye Retirement version black. So okay. I don't know. This might be like Muta? Some collector's item.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah, it might be some collector's item, but so anyway, I'll dump that on the shelf behind me for when I'm back at home in a couple of weeks. But for now, thank you everybody for watching. We will see you again on Friday. And
so we're not doing the questions with Dutch next week.
No, we're not. No, yeah, we've got Gail Kim next week.
Yeah, but I'm saying we got it, but we're not doing one.
No, so you've got a week off.
Okay, man.
So enjoy that. Right. So I should have really told you this off air, to be perfectly honest. So yeah, no, Gail Kim's already in the can. We're going to be showing that next week. This coming Friday.
Who did you say you wanted on the show? Chick Donovan.
I did say I wanted Chick Donovan on the show. No, I said I had the opportunity to interview him like last year, and I couldn't make it for some reason. But I'll catch him again at some point.
All right.
See if the dog's still alive or he's trained other talking dogs for that.
He was too much. He's a good guy, but boy, if you meet him, you would remember him.
Mm. As for that, how do I shut these podcasts down? How did I do it last time? Is it just sayonara, Dutch-san? We the people. We the people. I'll end it on that.
Yeah. Say it Japanese.
Hang on.
Hoyoha.
Hang on. Let me translate this. I'll do it properly. And I'm going to leave this in as well, but I can't get the web page up. Hang on. English to Japanese translation. We the people Guerrera Jimin.
That's it. Whatever he said. See you next week.